DC sports fans start their day with 106.7 The Fan's Sports Junkies.
Let Jaden cook.
With Commanders Talk.
They were 60 minutes away from the Super Bowl last year, and they're better this year.
And a lot of fun.
You're acting like I haven't been embarrassed in my life before. Right.
Every morning from 6 to 10.
I thought I handled myself with incredible maturity.
If you missed it live, listen to 106.7 The Fan's Sports Junkies on Apple Podcasts, Spotify.
They're listening to everything you do.
Or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Bullseye Saints Hour. Mike Haas along with Teron Armstead, the third round pick back in 2013. Arkansas Pine Bluff was this past weekend's Saints legend. 9 seasons with the Saints and 3 seasons with Miami. And I count them because there was no tail off, right? You made the Pro Bowl twice then. So let's kind of start somewhat at the beginning. Belleville, Illinois, right? High school was Cahokia?
Yeah, from Cahokia, Illinois. Yep.
Okay. It's on the east side of the Mississippi River, outside of St. Louis. French-Canadian colonists founded the colony for a French mission back in 1696 as a Catholic mission. There's a church there, Church of the Holy Family, the oldest continuously active Catholic parish in the United States. I say all that to say this. You were destined to be along the Mississippi River from high school to the New Orleans Saints, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I mean, can you imagine that? There's a bit of a journey in between there, yeah. But that's kind of cool, isn't it?
It is. It is. Even going from high school in Cahokia, Illinois, down the river and Arkansas, being in Arkansas at Arkansas Pine Bluff, and then eventually coming down to New Orleans in 2013, I do feel like I was destined to end up here.
Most people don't know, but the News Democrat in Arkansas, that's the paper of note, right? That's the biggie. And so in high school and college, your track and field, they named you the track and field athlete of the year, state champion shot put, 61.5 feet, 20.5 yards, also did discus, and at Arkansas Pine Bluff, shot put, discus, and hammer throw. Mm-hmm. So was that part of kind of off-season training or, hey, less spring football? Well, tell me about that, because that's you weren't just doing it for the heck of it. You were very good.
Yeah, so the crazy part is my junior year in high school, my high school head football coach, he said every offensive lineman will either have to wrestle or do track during the offseason. So I did track out of requirement, not because I wanted to. And my first year, I qualify for state. So I go out there, and I have no technique. I stand in the front of the ring, and I throw it, and I qualify for state. Next year, I win state, my senior year. So during that senior year, I get offers from every school in the country. But those big schools wouldn't let me play football. So if I came on a track scholarship to Florida, LSU, Miami, I wouldn't be able to play football. So I ended up going to a smaller school, Arkansas Pine Bluff, so I can do football and track. So I did football for my entire time there, and I did track for 3 years. And in track, I finished 10th in the country my junior year in the NCAA against Texas, Texas A&M, LSU, all those guys. I strongly feel, still to this day, like I always think about it, if I would have went back to track my senior year in college, I would be a national champion. I was 2 feet off from like 10th place to first place. We were 2 feet. We were all so close. And most of those guys, 8 of them were seniors. I do feel like I would have been an NCAA national champion in track.
Would you have ever considered the Olympics?
Football was always, which is why I didn't try to go to a big D1 college, is football had always been me and a part of me and my dream. So, no, I never really thought about going. I was like a foot away from Olympic trial mark, but I never really tried to pursue that.
Arkansas Pine Bluff, you're part of the SWAC Conference. It's southeast of Little Rock, between Shreveport and Little Rock for those. You were always part of the FCS. I went to a Division I AA, James Madison University.
Yeah, I was D1 AA too.
The big FCS. I don't like FCS. I don't like the word, yeah, you know. But back then, and you know, when you were in college in 2013 and all those years leading up to it, the smaller schools, you were called a diamond in the rough, mm-hmm. right? Now, are you kidding me? FCS are everywhere. But back then, it was a big deal to go get a young man from a Division I AA school. You must have felt that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It wasn't many of us when I got out of Arkansas Pine Bluff in 2013. And it's so interesting hearing the stories here from Mickey Loomis and Ryan Pace and Terry Fontenot, the guys that were making the decisions back when I was coming out of college. And they always tell me that Ryan Pace was the one that stood on the table and made them draft me in the third round. So, like, it was a very big discussion. They're going back and forth. No, we got this guy from this other school. Ryan Pace was the guy that really, hey, we're taking him right now, third round. I'm bet my job on it. And he actually went to Chicago Bears as the GM. So Ryan Pace really, really, really good at what he do. He's great at what he do. He's in Atlanta now with Terry Fontenot, who's the GM of the Atlanta Falcons.
So you're close. There's when somebody stands on a table for you. I don't know if anybody's ever stood on a table for me. Or that means, you know, you're desired. That must have felt pretty good.
Yeah, no, it was great. That was definitely great. I can't thank that man enough.
So because of the small school, right? You got to make an impression. This is beyond being you, a three-time All SWAC. So you go to the combine. You're on a 4.71. I think you were 6.5, 3.05. Is that right?
Yeah.
Right. A 4.71 in the 40. Still the fastest 40 time for an offensive lineman. Also in 2013, Lane Johnson runs a 4.72.
Yep.
So by a smithering, but he played last night where he played Monday night.
Yep.
For Philadelphia, still playing, but I don't know how fast you want to be as a tackle, but that had to have made an impression.
For sure, for sure. And I needed it. I needed every bit of that to get more attention and get the eyes on my film. So with Lane Johnson in his situation, he was a former quarterback who transitioned to tight end, who then transitioned to O-line. So, and he went to Oklahoma. So everyone knew Lane already. He was already kind of like slated to be top five, top 10 pick in that 2013 draft. So I had, when I went down the train pre-combine, I had a video of me running on the track. And my trainers made me delete it. They said, we want the wow factor. We want the shock factor at the combine. You're flying under the radar. We know Lane Johnson will be fast. He'll run fast. He'll most likely break the record. No one knows that you will. So we get to the combine, and it worked out exactly that way. I broke the record. Lane came in close second, same year. So I had my time to be like, I'm on ESPN and NFL.com and NFL Network and all those good things.
So you get drafted by the Saints, started 93 of your 97 games at left tackle, including 9 postseason games. So but when you come in, Saints had won already in 2009. Your job is to protect the franchise.
Yeah.
Drew Brees. Welcome to the team. That's just that. Had you know, as you're the blind side left tackle, man, that's pressure right off the bat.
Listen, it was immense pressure. I'm coming in, this young guy, 21 years old, out of Arkansas Pine Bluff, and I'm blocking for the face, like literally one of the faces of the NFL, but the child of New Orleans, like the most precious item of the city.
It was not lost on you. I can tell that already.
No, not at all. Not at all. Because it actually played a part into my career. Like how I approach the game is it was low key fear. Like I feared getting Drew Brees hit or getting Drew Brees hurt. That was a true fear of mine. And I really did. I would put my life and body on the line for that man to keep him clean. He was so incredible he never once like got on any O-lineman ever. If we miss a block and we made a mistake, it was so much encouragement and just confidence building. He really like relied on us and he made our job so much easier the way he diagnosed everything. He could point out blitzes and threats that was coming. It was incredible to be able to share the field with Drew Brees and just the time I spent with him. And then we became closer off the field. Drew would come to my house. I don't know if Brees would go to anybody else's house, but he would come by the house sometimes and eat dinner, or we play ping pong in the garage, or we became really close. Like, that's a brother of mine for life.
We will have more with former Saints offensive lineman Teron Armstead when we return. This is the Bullseye Saints Hour on the New Orleans Saints Radio Network.
DC sports fans start their day with 106.7 The Fan's Sports Junkies.
Let Jaden cook.
With Commanders Talk.
They were 60 minutes away from the Super Bowl last year, and they're better this year.
And a lot of fun.
You're acting like I haven't been embarrassed in my life before.
Right. Every morning from 6 to 10.
I thought I handled myself with incredible maturity.
If you missed it live, listen to 106.7 The Fan's Sports Junkies on Apple Podcasts, Spotify.
They're listening to everything you do.
Or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Bullseye Saints Hour. Bullseye, the official tailgate of the New Orleans Saints, and back with former Saints offensive lineman Teron Armstead. 2018, you played 10 games, so you hurt some in 2018, but just your first Pro Bowl and also your first All-Pro selection. What was it about 2018? I mean, obviously the team was great, but what was it about that year you think they finally went, oh my gosh, this kid's been around for 6 years, you know, let's...
So in 2015... I was the best tackle in football, best left tackle in the game. I'm locking everybody up. I'm also playing with a knee injury. And I think I played about 14 or 15 games, but I'm just now getting on the radar. So I'm playing really well every week, but they don't know me yet. 2016, I deal with an injury. I play half the season. 2017, I missed the first four games, same injury. 2018, I start the year off, I am the best tackling the NFL, unquestioned. And in my mind, and a lot of others too, 2018, for those 10 straight games, it was a shutout. No hits, no sacks, no pressures, no penalties. I was playing really well. I ended up pancaking a guy in Cincinnati, a linebacker, who just wouldn't go down. He wouldn't die the right way. And I tear my pec. And, man, I thought it was over. I thought my whole season was over. I was able to rehab for those last 6 weeks, come back in the playoffs. We play against Philly here. We get a first round bye, which also bought me extra time because I wouldn't have been able to play in the wild card. So we get the first round bye. We play Philly the second round, play against the Rams in the NFC Championship game. And I am balling. The game against the Rams was probably my best game as a New Orleans Saint in the NFC Championship. Unfortunate how that game ended. We know that's the no-call game. I don't even want to open that box of emotion, but 2018 was a special year.
Because you play with Drew, I mean, 5,000 yards a season became commonplace now. Could, you know, it was such a pass happy situation because he was so good and he was so smart. But I don't think people realize this could be a long one. Sorry. 2017, you're 11-5. The team was fifth in yards rushing, first in rush TDs, second in yards per run, 4.7 average. 2018, 13-3, fifth in attempts, seventh in rush yards, first in rushing TDs. 2019, you fell off, but in 2020, you come back, fifth in rush attempts, sixth in yards, first in rush TDs. These are all NFL rankings. So you're 49-15, playing at a level like no other team. Wow. And I think when teams say the Saints, they go, Drew Brees pass. When this team was good, in my estimation, at its best, they were running the ball well.
Absolutely. No question about it. And it was something that we prided ourselves on. And it was something that Drew prided himself on, too. Like, he wanted us to run the ball because it opened up so much for him in the passing game. If he's able to bring that safety down, like if we're able to do that up front where we're getting 5 yards of carry and that safety, one of those safeties got to come into the box and honor this run, you're under his mercy now because you got to guard his 3-4 eligibles with 3 or 4 people opposed to the extra person looming on the back end. So when we were at our best, it's when we ran the ball effectively, efficiently. Mark Ingram, Alvin Kamara, those two was a dynamic duo that took the league by storm. What we were able to do up front, in protection, but running the ball, I don't think we got our just due as run blockers.
I feel like the numbers even surprised you a little bit. You hadn't heard them in a
while. No, not really. Yeah. Not really. I know we got busy up front in the run game. I do. We had we brought over Larry Warford and Eric McCoy came in after Max Unger retired. Like, we had the guys that really, and me and Ramczyk were known mostly as pass protectors because we gave up very few sacks a year. But me and Ram were getting busy in that run game, man.
Almost done. I want to talk just about a couple more topics. Last week you spoke to the media. You were the legend for the Saints game, and it was very personal about your family, and it almost felt cathartic for you to kind of talk about it. And it was not an easy road. No. It was not paved with roses all the way around.
Sure.
From a family situation. Was it important to, I don't know, get that out or let them know?
It's still very new to me, and it's hard for me to open up and share stories and be vulnerable like that, because that's never been me. Anything that I've ever dealt with or was going through, I felt like I had to go through and deal with personally or on my own. I never was a guy that wanted to bring my problems into the building or bring what I was going through to work. And something that I really do and did pride myself on, I wanted to show up the same way every day. So a consistent attitude, a consistent demeanor. I felt like that was my part of being a captain. I had to show up a certain way every day. So even when I'm going through some of the hardest times, man, I definitely have my challenges, tall challenges, that I could have brought into the building, but I never wanted to allow myself to do that and have that. So I think it created a relationship in my relationships. It created a space for people to, they know that they can come to me and talk to me. Because on a daily basis, I'm going to give them the same effort and energy. I'm going to come to them with a smile, with openness. And, man, I've listened to a lot of other people's challenges. And I wore that as well. I put that on my shoulders as well. As the captain, I feel like that was my job.
Family man?
I am.
What's the youngin's situation?
I have twin girls. They're 12 years old. Appreciate it. 12-year-old twin girls. And I have a son. He's 8 years old.
You turned 34. Congratulations. I have two daughters myself. No son, just two daughters, much older. Right. So enjoy the ride. You turned 34 in July. Mm-hmm. Announced your retirement this past spring. What were the signs or indicators for you that it was time? Because obviously, because 34 in this day and age actually is kind of young, but I mean, you still played a ton of years.
Yeah.
What made you decide?
I mean, my body, for one, my knee. I had been dealing with the knee for many years. It started my third year in the league, so went 9 years with a knee that never got to 100% or relatively close, honestly. So it just really got to a point of no return. I have to get it replaced at some point. So it was the knee, the big factor, and then the kids. As you know, you got two daughters. You know that they grow up, man, every day. It's a new experience. I got new thoughts and new topics, and it was time, you know, it was time for me to be, and I've already was close to my kids, but it's different just being there every day and taking them to school, picking them up from school and all that. I cherish that, and I really wanted to be there to be able to do that.
And finally, let's talk about the next chapter for you. So first off, post-football, you played the same, as I said, 6'5", 305. I went to your Instagram. I kid you not, I thought the first three pictures on your Instagram were LeBron James. Especially the red jacket with the profile. You know what I'm talking about? Has anybody ever said that?
I do.
I mean, I'm going, look at the man showing up here with LeBron on his page, right? I'm going, holy cow, that's him.
That's me.
That's him. So you're still 6'5", but what are you now?
About 270. About 270. Yeah, LeBron about 6'8", about 265, so... Close. We don't really look that much alike, which is crazy because some kids call me LeBron. Are you LeBron James? No, man. No.
Those pictures, let me tell you. So you got 99,000 followers, soon to be 100,000. Now you do a podcast, Teron and Friends Nightcap Takeover, right? You doing that now? Is that still happening?
No. So the takeover I did was for Nightcap for Shannon Sharp and Ocho Cinco. So I have my own show on YouTube. It's called The Set. The Set with Teron Armstead, with T-Stead. So you can find it on YouTube under my name, Teron Armstead, or my nickname, T-Stead. And we're talking O-line, D-line matchups and breaking down technique, fundamentals, what happened on Sunday and how did it happen. So we all kind of like walk people through the process of what goes into these reps and pass protection and in the run game. I've had a lot of guests come on already. Cam Jordan has been one of my guests. Chris Collinsworth came on. I had Robert Hunt and Rashawn Slater, so a lot of Pro Bowlers as well. So you guys, please go like, comment, share, subscribe to The Set on YouTube. Come join the show.
When did you realize, when you had Cam on the show, that he was interviewing you and you were not interviewing him?
The man just took over my whole show, bro.
No.
Just the whole, no. Me and Cam, we have a deep relationship. Like, we've been on vacation together in multiple places. So we talked, and that's kind of how the show went. We just really talked. It was more so a conversation opposed to an interview. And we bounced around a lot of different topics. I tried to ask some Saints questions about this 2025 campaign, but of course the conversation went wherever he wanted it to go.
And because you are wearing it, the Teron Armstead Foundation.
Yeah, so Teron Armstead Foundation, we're really center focused now. We did a lot of work here when I was in New Orleans, a lot of community work, a lot of events. But now we're center focused on my community center I have in Cahokia, Illinois. And we're doing financial literacy, character development, and life skills. We're teaching like real life practices. We're getting into the weeds of credit and taxes and life skills and character development as well, like proper handshake, eye contact, public speaking. All those things. So non-traditional school teaching, but I think it's really impactful for life, honestly. So
I've done a lot of these. This has been a treat. It's been an honor. Thank you very much, man. I appreciate it.
Sir, thank you.
DC sports fans start their day with 106.7 The Fan's Sports Junkies.
Let Jaden cook.
With Commanders Talk.
They were 60 minutes away from the Super Bowl last year, and they're better this year.
And a lot of fun.
You're acting like I haven't been embarrassed in my life before. Right.
Every morning from 6 to 10.
I thought I handled myself with incredible maturity.
If you missed it live, listen to 106.7 The Fan's Sports Junkies on Apple Podcasts, Spotify.
They're listening to everything you do.
Or wherever you get your podcasts.